Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bechoros Daf Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 14 lines from the top of Daf Hey. You will notice at the end of the line a diamond. This diamond is explained in the outside margin under our Mivneh heading. In our Shas Ozer, which is the cornerstone of Gemara markings, the Shas, the Gemara that appears on your screen, we offer in the margin of our Gemaras title headings that we call Nosei and structural notes that we entitle Mivneh. In this case, we have featured the diamond. As you can see, there is one here, and a few lines later, another one. These are She'eloisov shel kunt rogis hasar, an official in the Roman government, that he asked questions, the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai b'inyan b'chora. Two questions that he raises in the realm, in the context of the issue of firstborn. So we should say there are two questions he raises. One of the questions regards the issue of the firstborn, and the second question refers to the issue of money collections that took place in the Midbar and the accuracy of the accounting. So we now turn to the Gemara. Shoal kuntrukus hasar es Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. It's just parenthetically, the name kuntrukus reminds one of the English word cantankerous. And as the Gemara goes on, we'll leave that to the listening audience to see if there's any relevance to that similarity. So this official, Kuntrukus, asks Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Befrotan shel Leviim, when you look at the enumeration of the Leviim, the census of the Leviim, in a family-by-family nature, in other words, as reported in the Torah, the family of Levi, of the tribe of Levi, was broken down into his three sons, Gershon, Kos, and Merari, and there was a census of each one of these sons and the families that they raised. So if you count up the people in the census of the Leviim Befrotan, according to the breakdown that we just mentioned, Atamotse, you will find Esrim Ushnaim Elef Ushloshmeos, 22,300 individuals. Bechlolan Atamotse, when the Torah refers to the number of people in the tribe of Levi, you find Esrim Ushnaim Elef, 22,000. Shloshmeos Lehechon Hochu, where did the other 300 go? There seems to be a lack of accounting for those 300 that we mentioned just before. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai answers, Omar le, oison shlosh meos, those extra 300 bechoros hoyu, they were first born. Ve'ein bechor mafkia bechor, a firstborn Levi is not capable of redeeming, serving as the means of redemption of a firstborn of Israel, of the rest of Klal Yisrael. This discussion is coming on the heels of our previous daf, where we learned about the fact that the tribe of Levi served as the redemption of the firstborn of Israel. There were, let's say, there were approximately 22,000 firstborn in Israel, and that number corresponds to this number 22,000 in the tribe of Levi. Without getting into actual details, we're using these numbers, in these round numbers. But in the course of presenting these numbers, we say, well, in the tribe of Levi, there really were not just 22,000, there were 22,300. So he is answering, Rabbi Yochumazak is answering right now, that those 300 extra Levites, they themselves were Bechorim. And as such, they would not represent an individual that would redeem the Bechor from the rest of Israel. My taimo. So the Gemara further asks, why not? Why is it that we say that a Bechor is not mafkia a Bechor? Amar Abai, dayo la Bechor, shi yafkia kedushas atzmo. It should be enough. It's sufficient that he is able to undo the kedushas Bechora of himself. In other words, he removes his own Bechor status, and he thereby uses up, so to speak, all of his redemption powers. V'oid sho'alo, and another question this Kuntrukas raised. This question deals with the collection of monies in the Midbar, and specifically the monies collected in the context of the Machzis HaShekel, which was used for the building of the Mishkan. So he says, in the collection of the monies, at Begibui, the collection, Begibui Kesef Atomotze, Mosayim V'achas Kikor V'achas Esrei Mone. That's 201 Kikor. A Kikor is a measure of silver, and likewise a Mone. And he says, so that you find that they collected 201 kikor plus 11 mone. Dechtiv beka lagogolis machzis hashekel b'shekel hakodesh. In that posuk, you see a reference to this number. Now, that's as far as the collection of the money is concerned. Ubenesinas hakesef, when the money then was given over to the Mishkan construction committee, atamotze maas kikar, you find only 100 kikar. Dichti vahi maas kikar hakesef lotzekes v'chule. So there is a discrepancy here. On the one hand, they collected over 200 kikar of kesef, and in the distribution of the money or the use of the money, you only find 100 of it being used. So he asks, Moshe Rabchem Ganav Hoya, was he a thief, or Kabyustus Hoya, another type of thief, or Eino Boki Becheshbonos, or did he simply not know how to make an accounting? Nosan Mechza Venotal Mechza. He gave over one half of that which he collected and took seemingly for himself a half, and and even one complete half lo hechsir. That means if they collected 201 kikar and he gave over 100, so 100 is less than half of 201. This is his question. We've also indicated to the space, the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, the indication that this is a long question by featuring a shin on the to that immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. Omar lo, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai answers, Moshe Rabbeinu Gizbor Ne'emon Hoya, he was a very trustworthy treasurer, Uboki Bechashbonis Hoyo, and he was an expert in accounting. And what you don't realize is Umonoshul Kodesh Koful Hoyo. And once money is sanctified, the it becomes Kodesh, and the money of Kodesh, instead of a money containing 1,500 Sloyim or Shkolim, or let us say, instead one mona, let us say this again, instead of one mona containing 25 sloyim, the mona of Kodesh would contain 50 sloyim. Now, we're using numbers in our discussion, but for the time being, what we're saying is that the 100 kikar after it was sanctified is really the same as 200 kikar prior to the sanctification, so that if they collected 201 kikar, let's use round numbers for the moment, if they collected 200 kikar from the public, when sanctified, it is doubled, or it's the mona of kodesh is double. Hence, when looking at it in kodesh terms, it comes out to be half the amount, but it's really the same amount. It's simply that the mona shel kodesh is contains twice the amount of sloyim that the mona of chol, of a common or mundane mona, would contain. Before going on in the Gemara, Rashi points out, and if you happen to review this Gemara by learning the Rashi, you will notice he gets involved with all of the money breakdowns that are appropriate for appreciating in great detail this particular Gemara. We just want to share a few of the numbers that are cited in Rashi and that we may cite as we go along in the Gemara. And they are, we've noted them on the in the margin of the Gemara. One kikar contains 60 mona. 60 mona contains 1,500 sloyim, which in effect is 3,000 chatzoi shkolim. A sela and a shekel, the sela, a shekel found in the Torah is the same as the sela coin that's used often in rabbinic literature. So 1,500 full sloim or shkolim is the same as 3,000 chatzoi shkolim. We know that the census of the Jews in the Midbar equaled over 600,000. It's 603,550. But for using round numbers just to make things a little easier, 600,000 is the number of Jews. So that if they collected 200 kikar, and one kikar is 3,000, so 200 of those would be 600,000, giving you a sense of how the coin and the collection of the Machzor Shekel would tally up to the number in round terms of 600,000. We also mentioned in the course of our discussion the term mone, and we briefly noted that a mone is made of 25 sela. So in the little chart or that we have list of numbers of coins that we mentioned, being that one mona is 60 sela or 60 shekel, once again, one mona is 25 shekel, so 60 times 25 will get you 1,500. The term mone is also associated, like, by the way, with the term dinar. Mona, let's say, repeat that. The term mona is associated with the number 100, mea. Mona is, it means basically in coins, 100. 100 what? 100 dinar. There are 4 dinar in a sela, so that if we mention that a mona contains 25 sela, at the same time, you realize that one mona contains 100 dinar. So that one mona is the same as we said, 25 sela or shekel, which also is the same as 100 dinar. These are all numbers that will have significance for the sugya and as one learns the Rashi. Now, we continue in the Gemara. What we have seen so far, just to recap, Kontrukas raised his skepticism regarding Moshe Rabbeinu's financial abilities and trustworthiness. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai answered him to the point. And now we continue in the Gemara. Havi bo Rav Achoy. Rav Achoy, Havi is an expression meaning question. He has a question here. My kokashile, what was the question in the first place? Vayehi me'as kikar hakesef lotzekes v'chulei. He seemed to be asking this. Kuntrikus was asking, based on the giving of the money over to the Mishkan, where 200 plus was collected, and only 100 was given over to the Mishkan. But this pasuk itself actually doesn't present a question whatsoever. It shouldn't raise any doubts whatsoever. Very simply, Hanoch Lotzekes, the 100 kikar that were featured in this pasuk, that was for Lotzekes, which, if you look in the psukim, that is associated with the base, the adonim, the basis of each keresh, each board used to create the frame of the Mishkan, the Enoch, and the other 100 plus Begaza, that was for the treasury. So that Moshe Rabbeinu, true, he collected over 200 kikar. 100 of those were given over for the Adonim, for the silver sockets that formed the base of the Mishkan frame. And the balance, the Enoch, the rest, that was Begaza for the treasury. So the Gemara answers why there is a difficulty. Because Kosav Kro Achrinam, there's another pasuk that does not make any reference to the lotzekes, to the sockets forming the foundation. And there it says, Ukvekese pekude ho'edo me'as kikar v'chule, where the money that was accounted for was only 100. So that is the problem, but Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai already answered that by saying that once the money was given over to the Mishkan fund, it became kodesh, and as such, it contains it's twice as large as the common currency. So if in common currency terms we talk about 200 kikar, when it becomes Kodesh containing it being twice as large, so the 200 common small ones become 100 large ones. Now the Gemara focuses on the answer that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai gave, that the Mona Shel Kodesh was in fact double. Udeka'omale Mona Shel Kodesh Kofel Hoya Mino Le. From where does he know that? You'll notice now that we have a series of triangles, and on the outside margin we have explanations for this. First of all, the nosei, the topic heading that introduces this piece of Gemara, is what we already said, Minayin Demona Shel Kodesh Kofel Hoya. From where do we know that the Mona Shel Kodesh, the Mona currency of the Beis HaMikdash, was twice the size of the common coin or common currency? And the Mivneh, under this we feature the triangle, Shlavim, stages, Lanois She'ela Hanal, to answer this question. From where do we know? From where do we know the Mona Shel Kodesh was twice as large? So the Gemara starts. Now what we have done by way of markings to just give a sense of how long the Gemara is involved with this, we also have a long answer marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text that includes all of the stages. There are rejections along the way until we get to the final answer, but this all constitutes the answer. So, in lema, mine, if you say from the pasuk itself, dichtiv, we have a small section that we skip momentarily based on the Bach's reading of the Gemara, and we'll pick it up later when we see the next star that we've drawn into the Gemara. So if you think it's from this pasuk where it says V'es ho'elef u'shva me'ois v'chamisha v'shivim osa vovim la'amudim, there's a reference to 1775 for the purpose of these vovim that were made. Now, that number, 1775, could have been presented as what now in the bracketed section could have been presented as follows, Sharei Kan, Shivim Ve'echod Mona. This is 1,775 sloim, really could have been described as 71 mona. If one mona is made of 25 sela, the number 1775 sela could simply be explained in mona terms as follows. 1,775 is broken down. 1,500 sela would be 60 mona. The 250 would be another 10 mona, and 25 would be 1 mona, as you can see on the side of the Gemara, how we broke this down for you. So 1,775 sela would be 71 mona. Now, the fact that the Pasuk does not report it like that, as we should go back to the Gemara reading, the bracketed section said Sharei Kan Shivim Vechod Mona. There are 71 Mona in this number. Velo, and skipping back now to the star section, Velo Monon Hakosuv Ella Befrot wrote, and the Gemara, the Pasuk only mentions the small coin, Befrot wrote, reference to the individual coin, the Sela currency. V'im Esau, if it were so, Meo v'echod kikor v'achas esrei mona miboyalei. So as we just read in the Gemara, if it were so that the mona, let us say, was not doubled, so it would have been able to report in the Pasuk, in the Psukim, as follows. When you look at the Psukim on the in the Chumash Shmos Perek Lamed Ches, you see that there was a reference to 100 kikar for the Adonim, for the, what we said before, Lotzekes, to form the basis of the frame around the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, that is. And in Pasuk Chav Ches, there is a reference to 1775 for the Vovim. Could the Pasuk not have reported, as the Gemara just suggested, that the Im Esau, if it were so that the coinage of the Beis HaMikdash of the Mishkan was not doubled, it could have said, Meo v'echot kikor v'achas esrei mona miboyalei. Just to review these numbers, we saw a reference to 100 kikar already for the Adonim. There were 100 sockets. Each socket was one kikar. That accounts for 100 kikar. Then there was another 1,775 sloyim, which when you calculate the numbers, that comes out to 71 mone, and 71 mone, 60 of them forms one kikar, and you have a balance of 11 mona. So couldn't, as the Gemara said, had the coinage been of a regular nature, that 1775 would have been able to be tallied as one kikar, 11 mona. El midolo monon hakosuv elo befrofrot, from the fact that the posuk, namely posuk chof ches, doesn't mention anything about that. It just mentions the 1,775 sloyim. So shma mino, it must be that mona shel kodesh kofel hoya, that the mona of kodesh, the holy, once the money was sanctified, it would then be contain the double the amount of the original coinage. Therefore, instead of a kikar being made of, let's say, 1,500 sela, it would now be that a kikar would contain 3,000 sela. And as a result, 1,775 doesn't come close to equaling even one kikar. Because in order to get to one kikar now, you would need to have 3,000. Therefore, the Pasuk left it as mentioned in the Sela form, 1,775. The Gemara says, well, that's not convincing. V'dilma kloli kochoshiv bekikri, proti lo kochoshiv bekikri. Maybe the Torah, when it wants to make reference to kikars, it mentions just the round numbers, the kloli, like like it did 100 kikar, and doesn't get involved with the what we call the change, the extra 1 kikar and 11 mona. So when it mentions the round number 100, and then the rest it leaves in the mefura in the prot form. Elo mehacha. Well, rather from the following pasuk, we will make our point that the mona shel kodesh was kafel. This too will not last, as you see if you skim down a few lines. You'll see vidilma is squiggle underline again, the point of rejection, just like we squiggle on the vidilma the line before this, showing the point of rejection. Elo mehacha. The pasuk says there in Shmos Lamaches Pasuk Haftes, Unechoshes Hatnufa Shivim Kikar V'Alpayim V'Arba Meis Shekel. Sharei Kan, in this pasuk, you find Tishim V'Shisha Mone V'Lo Monon HaKosuv Elo B'Frofot. It leaves the pasuk, it leaves it with 2,400 shekel, which is sloyim, 2,400, and it doesn't readjust that number to read as follows. After all, you've got in 2,400 selah, you've got 96 mone, and in 96 mone, you could have made one additional kikar with a balance of 36 mona. And the pasuk here isn't dealing with numbers like 100. It's, after all, the pasuk doesn't hesitate to mention 70 kikar. That's not a large round number in the context of our discussion. So could the Torah not have reported by saying that there was really 71 kikar and with a balance plus 36 mona? Elo. So shma mino, rather, we see from here, it must be that the mona shel kodesh kafel hoya, that the kodesh standard was double, and therefore until you would have 120 mona or 3,000 selah, you wouldn't have a kikar. So the fact that you have here only 70, you'd have only 71 kikar, which we got to by calculating 2,400, that wouldn't in fact be a full kikar anymore. You would need to have 3,000. So from this, the Gemara wants to say, you see that the mona shel kodesh was double. The Gemara once again rejects this and says, "V'dilma proto rabo kochoshiv bekikri, proto zuta lo kochoshiv bekikri." There wasn't any doubling, and if you'll ask why doesn't the pasuk mention 71 kikar and leaves it as 70 kikar plus 2,400 shekel, it's because 71, which is 70 plus 1, it doesn't want to mention 1. 70 is itself a round number, relatively speaking, but the 1 kikar is not a significant enough number to warrant being mentioned in the kikar form. Therefore, it's left as 2,400 sloyim. Elo Omar Avchista Mehocha. Now the Gemara cites a pasuk in Yecheskel from which we will conclude that the mona shel kodesh was double. The pasuk says, "V'hashekel esrim gera." One shekel is equivalent to esrim gera. That was a unit of money, a way to calculate money and its weight. So one shekel was 20 gera. And now the pasuk makes reference to a number of shkolim. Esrim shkolim, chamisha ve'esrim shkolim, asora ve'chamisha shekel, hamona ye lochem. Now, if you add up these numbers, 20, 25, and 15, this pasuk is making reference to 60 shkolim. And it also says that the 60 shkolim will be a moneh. A moneh is, as we said earlier, 100 dinar. But this is like preposterous. How can you say that 60 shkolim is the equivalent of a moneh? V'ha mason v'arboin havyon. 60 shekel is not 100 dinar. 60 shekel that the Pasuk makes reference to would be the equivalent of 240 dinar. So how can the Pasuk that says there are that 60 shekel, 60 sloim is a mona, when 60 shekel would ordinarily be 240 dinar, not 100? Eloshma mino mono shel kodesh kofel hoya. So it's concluded from this that the mona of kodesh was really twice the original amount, and therefore, if the common mona contained 25 shekel, the kodesh mona, being twice as large, would contain 50 shekel. Ah, the Pasuk makes a reference to 60 shekel, 10 more than 50. Ushma mino, and another thing, another point of information that we learn from this Pasuk, is moisifen al hamidos, that there is an allowance to increase the size of measures. Well, that's what was referred to, that originally a mona contained 25 shkolim. Now the mona contains 50 shkolim. And another point, v'ein mosifin yeser al shtus, that when we add, we don't add more than 1/6. So what happened? We have an original number, 50, was then increased in size to 60. So when you go from 50 to 60, just before we go on in the Gemara, we have just to go over a point that we did not state accurately enough, and that is, point one remains as we said, the mona shel kodesh was kofel, that means in terms of the original mona, a standard mona containing 25 shekel, the kodesh mona would contain 50 shekel. Point number two is that we see in this pasuk that instead of a mona being described as 50 shekel, it's actually described as having 60 shekel. That indicate the move from 50 to 60 proves that moisifin al hamidos, that quantities can be increased. V'ein moisifin yeser al shtus, that when you increase something, you can't increase it more than a sixth. So that means going from 50 to 60, we've increased it by a sixth. Well, how do you say that the increase of 10 is 1/6? That's ushma mino shtusa mi labar. That's by the fact that we look at 1/6 from the milabar, from the outside, meaning from the new number that we arrived at, namely 60, 10 is 1/6 of 60. So that we can increase measures. The measure of the mona shel kodesh used to be 50 sloyim. That's not a function of mosifin al hamidos. That's a function of the fact that the mona shel kodesh was double the mona shel chol. Instead of containing 25, it would contain 50. But then, at a certain point in time, as the Pasuk in Yechezkel shows, they actually increased the mona shel kodesh from containing 50 to 60 mona. Now, that increase represents a toisefes, an adding of 1/6. But that's when you look at it from the outside, from the evaluating the ratio or the relationship of 10 to 60, it's 1/6. As we go on in the Gemara, we should, before going on, just point out that we concluded the discussion that we were engaged in. Namely, we had the questions of Kontrukus posed to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and The last issue was the issue of the money collections, and the answer that was given to the Roman official was that the money of Kodesh, when the money is sanctified, it is double the size of the coinage as pertains to the general public, and hence if there was a collection of say 200 kikar, once it was dedicated and then referred to in Kodesh terms, that original 200 common kikar would then turn into 100 holy kikar. And of course, not having, it's all the same amount, just that the Kodesh standards contains twice the amount of the common standard. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a series of triangles. These are introduced on the outside margin under our Mivneh heading. She'elois shesha Rabbi Chanina es Rabbi Lozer bebeis ha-medrash ha-godol. Questions that Rabbi Chanina posed to Rabbi Lozer in the great base medrash, the great study hall. Omar Rabbi Chanina, Sha'alti es Rabbi Lozer bebeis moisva rabo. Beis moisva rabo is the base medrash ha-godol. Ma nishtanu pitrei chamoirim mi pitrei susu megmalim. Why is it that the Torah commands regarding the firstborn donkeys that they have holiness, sanctity to them, as opposed to firstborn horses or camels? What's special about the donkey? Omele, Xeris Hakosafi. First of all, it's a Torah ruling. It's the word of God. And as such, that should be a sufficient answer. However, we also will give an explanation for that. V'oid shesayu Yisrael b'shas yitziyosu mi'mitzrayim. The donkeys helped, they assisted the Jews during their exit from Egypt. They were beasts of burden. She'ein l'chol kol echa v'echa Yisrael. There wasn't any individual of the Jews. Shelo hoyu imo tishim chamoirim luvim. That didn't have 90 Luvim. Luvim is a name of a country, so these donkeys came from Luv. 90 Luvian donkeys, Teunim, Mikaspo, Vizavo, Shel, Mitzrayim. So each, there was a vast amount of wealth that the Jews took with them upon their exit from Mitzrayim. And as was just described, that every Jew had 90 donkeys carrying gold and silver out of Egypt, each Jew. So you can then multiply that by the number of Jews, and you'll see that we're talking about a vast amount of wealth. V'od sha'altiv, Rabbi Chanina says, I also asked him, my loshon refidim, in Shmois, Perek Yudzayin Posaches, you see the term refidim appearing, and we've included this pasuk on the side of our Gemara. But it says there, "Vayovo Amalek vayilochem im Yisrael b'refidim," that the Amalekites came and waged war with the Jews in refidim. The Omar Li, so Rabbi Chanina tells us that Rabbi Lozer answered, "Refidim shmo." Well, that's the name of the place. It seems from this answer that he is not looking at the word refidim as having any deeper significance than the fact that that's the name of the location. However, this issue itself is how to deal with the word refidim, or the place refidim, and the name is a machlokes tanoim, is a tanaic controversy, as is featured here. Rabbi Lozer Omer, refidim shma. The Tano, Rabbi Eliezer, not to be confused with the individual that Rabbi Chanina was posing his questions to, the Amora Rebbe Lozer, but the Tana Rebbe Eliezer, says, like Rebbe Lozer had answered, Refidim Shma. Well, that's the name of the place. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Rabbi Yeshua gives a deeper meaning to the word, to the place, Sherifu Yidatzma Midivrei Torah. They loosened themselves or weakened their connection with Torah study. V'chein hu omer, and you find the term rifu in this sense of a loosening. It says, lo hofnu avois elbonim mi rifyon yodayim. Rifyon yodayim means a sense of weakness. So that using Rabbi Yeshua's pshat, And looking back at the pasuk, it says that the Amalek people came and waged war with the Jews because the Jews had weakened their attachment to Torah study, which is a very profound lesson that Rabbi Yeshua is conveying to us, that the defense that the Jewish people have against their enemies is through increased Torah study. When the Jewish people become lax in Torah study, they are opening themselves up to attack from their enemies. The Ode, Gemara continues, Sha'altiv, I also asked him, that's Rabbi Chanina asking Rabbi Lozer in the great Beis Medrash, my Lashon Shitim. This is a pasuk in Bamidbar, Perichofei Pasuk Aleph, and we've included this pasuk as well. It says, Vayeshev Yisrael Bashitim, Vayachal Ha'om Liznois El Benois Moyov. Pasuk refers to the Jews encamping in a place called Shittim during their exodus from Mitzrayim, during their sojourn in the Midbar, that they involved themselves, engaged in immorality, in illicit relations with the women folk of Moab. The pasuk makes reference to them having encamped in Shittim. So he's asking, what is behind this word? The Omar Li, and Rabbi Lozer answered me, Shittim Shmo. Well, that's the name of the place. Once again, the Gemara says that the issue concerning this place name, Ketanoi, is a machlokes tanoi. Rabbi Yulezer Omer, Shittim Shmo. That's its name. And Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Shinis Asku Bedivrei Shtus. That they engaged in foolishness, in foolish activity, which is a reference to the znus, to the immoral intimacy conducted with these heathen women. Vatikreno la'om l'zivche Elohehen. You'll notice that this is the next pasuk in Sefer Bamidbar, which we just discussed regarding the encounter with the women from Moab, and it says they vatikreno la'om, they summon the people to sacrifice to their idols. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Arumos Pogu Bohen. Rabbi Lezer is focusing on the word vatikreno, and he says that indicates that that the women folk met the men from the Jewish people unclothed. Rabbi Yoshua Omer Shinasu Kulon Bale Kerion. The word Vatikreno, as far as Rabbi Yoshua is concerned, has as its root the word Keri Mikre, which is a male emission, that upon meeting these women, the males experienced this emission. The Mishnah. Before going on, we have a title heading to this Gemara, and we've written Nidme Poter Min HaBechora. The term Nidme refers to a situation where an animal gives birth to an offspring that doesn't resemble the parent animal. The Mishnah, Pora Shiolda Kemin Chamor, a cow gave birth to an offspring that looks like a donkey. The Chamor Shiolda Kemin Sus, or a donkey that gave birth to an offspring looking like a horse. Ptura Min HaBechora, these freak offspring happen to be firstborn, they would be exempt from the Bechora obligation. Shenemar, Petechamor, Shnei Pomem. The Torah makes reference to Petechamor twice in the Torah. Once in Sefer Shmos, and another time in that, namely Sefer Shmos, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel, and Perek Lamedalid, Pasuk Beis. From this doubling of the Torah, we learn Ad Shei Hayoled Chamor Vanolad Chamor. There won't be a mitzvah of Bechor unless the parent is a Bechor and the offspring is a Bechor. A Chamor, that is, until the mother is a Chamor and the child is a Chamor. In other words, the child must look like the mother. Uma Heim Ba'achila. What is the halacha with regard to offspring that do not resemble their parents with regard to the allowance to eat. So, behemot Torah, shiodo kemin behemot tamea mutar b'achila. As long as the mother is a kosher variety creature, even though the offspring maybe looks like an unkosher variety, it's allowed to be eaten. And the opposite is also the case. Utmeo shiodo kemin behemot tahora osur b'achila. If you have an unkosher parent that gave birth to a freak offspring looking like a kosher variety animal, the offspring is forbidden to eat. Now, from these two examples, you can see a rule, and the rule would basically say that allowance regarding the consumption is dependent on the identity of the parent, not what the offspring looks like. Shehayotze min ha-tomei, tomei, that which comes forth from an unkosher variety animal, whatever it looks like, whatever the offspring looks like, tomei is unkosher. Vayotze min ha-tohor, tohor, whatever comes from a kosher variety parent, mother animal, whatever the offspring looks like, it will be considered tohor, acceptable, one can eat it. Later, the Gemara will ask, why is it necessary for the Mishnah to present this rule after seeing the two examples? The examples themselves could have served to communicate, convey what the rule is. Was it really necessary for the Mishnah to spell it out in this final clause, Shayotz min atome tome? Now we look at the Gemara. Here we have a title heading, Rochel Shiyolda min Eiz, a sheep that gives birth to an offspring looking like a goat. Mahu lebechor, what will the din be regarding the bechora? So our Gemara opens, Tanan Hasam. We have a Mishnah that says, Rochel Shiyolda min Eiz, the Eiz Shiyolda min Rochel, poter min habechora. If the sheep gave birth to an offspring looking like a goat, or a mother goat gave birth to an offspring looking like a sheep, there is bechora exemption. The im yesh bo miksa simonim chayav, if the offspring has some characteristics resembling the mother, there will be a bechor obligation. Mino hani mili, what is the basis of this source? Omer of Yehuda, Tiamakro, there is a pasuk. It says, Ach Bechor Shor. The pasuk actually goes on to see, and we'll see it broken down in the pasuk, in the Gemara. It says, Bechor Shor, Bechor Kesev, Bechor Eiz. So once it says, Ach Bechor Shor, Shiehu Shor, Ubechoro Shor. Rashi points out that the appearance of the word Bechor in this pasuk would in and of itself be extra, because I could have figured out from the context of the pasuk that we are talking about Bechor, because just before this it mentions Kol Peter Rechem, the firstborn, and yet when enumerating the different kinds of animals, the word Bechor is inserted. That teaches me this law, Shehu Shor Ubechoro Shor, that in order for there to be a din of Bechora, the parent has to be a shor, and the offspring has to look like a shor and not like something else. Bechor kesev, from the same pasuk, tells me shehu kesev ubechoro kesev. The mother a sheep, and the offspring must look like a sheep. Bechor eiz, shehu eiz ubechoro eiz, where the mother looks like a goat, and the offspring must look like a goat in order for there to be a mitzvah of bechor. Yochol afilu yesh bo miksas simonim, will there be an exemption in the case of an animal that only has some signs or some features that resemble the parent? Tamalomer ach cholok. The word ach in the pasuk we saw, ach bechor shor, is a limitation, namely this idea of being exempt if it doesn't look like the parent. This exemption is only partial, namely, that if the offspring looks partially like the parent, there will be Bechor obligation. The Gemara asks, why is Rav Yehuda, whom we've been involved with the last few lines, we underlined his name just a couple lines up, why is he giving us a source for this necessity of offspring looking like parent in order for there to be a din of Bechor, a posuk that's different than that which we saw in the Mishnah? V'hotano peter peter konosiv lo lepora. The Mishnah itself gave the double appearance of the word peter hamor to communicate this idea that the until the offspring looks like the parent, there won't be a mitzvah of bechora. So the Gemara answers, who the Amak Rav Yossi Aglili? Rav Yehuda, who cited a different posuk to communicate this idea, was basing himself on the Tana Rav Yossi Aglili. The Sanya, Rav Yossi Aglili Omer, we have a Tanaic source featuring Rav Yossi Aglili, he says, Ach Bechor Shor. Now you'll see he quotes the very posuk that Rav Yehuda was quoting. Rav Yossi Aglili, of course, being an earlier source, the precedent or the basis for the Amora Rav Yehuda citation. And it says in this source, Ach Bechor Shor, meaning Ad Shiei Hu Shor Bechor Shor. Bechor Kesef Ad Shiei Hu Kesef U Bechor Kesef. O Bechor Eiz Ad Shiei Hu Eiz U Bechor Eiz. Just like we explained already. Yochol Afilu Yeshboi Miksa Simonim. Will there be an exemption from Bechora if there are partial signs or characteristics that make it look like the parent? Tamalomar Ach Cholok. That if there are partial signs, then it won't be exempted, but will be chayav in Bechora. B'mai komiflgi, what's the underlying point of controversy between these Tanaic sources? We have our Mishnah that cites Peter Hamor twice. Peter Hamor being the basis of this halacha that offspring must look like parent in order for there be a bechor obligation, as opposed to Reb Yossi Haglili, who cites the Ach Bechor Shor pasuk. The Gemara answers, Tana Didon Savar, our Tana that cites Peter Hamor is of the opinion, Goli Rachmona Bekdushas Domim, the Torah reports this halacha concerning firstborn donkeys, which is something that is not sanctified in a sacrificial sense, which is called Kedushas Haguf, but rather has a sanctity that's of a monetary nature, a value nature. So the Torah reveals this child-parent appearance relationship in the realm of Kedushas Domim, Fuadin B'Kedushas Aguf, and we will apply this same requirement, offspring parent similarity requirement, to the realm of Kedushas Aguf, things that have animals that have inherent sanctity, as is the case with firstborn animals to be offered as sacrifices. For Rabbi Yossi, Savar, Rabbi Yossi, who cited the Posuk dealing with the Bechor Shor. Kesev and A's, which are animals, when they appear as firstborn, they are brought as sacrifices themselves. They're not mere monetary considerations, but also bodily sanctified. So Rabbi Yossi, Savar, Goli, Rachman, Vishus, Aguf, the Torah reveals this halacha that there won't be sanctity until the offspring looks like the parent in the realm of Kedushas Aguf. That's where the Torah reveals this halacha, and then on our own, V'huadin B'Kedushas Domim, we will extrapolate from that to the realm of Kedushas Domim, donkey firstborn, and say the same law applies. V'gomar Kedushas Domim M'Kedushas Aguf. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili will learn the halachas that apply to Kedushas Domim, which is Peter Chamor, the firstborn donkey, from the realm of Kedushas Aguf, the realm of firstborn animals that would be offered as sacrifices, as was reflected in the pasuk of Ach Bechor Shor. V'tona didon hai Bechor Bechor mai Ovid lei. What does our Mishnah, who cited the Peter Chamor pasuk as it appeared twice, what does he do with the repetitious appearance of the word Bechor that Rabbi Yossi Haglili had made a point of? Now, by the way of markings, we want to just show with our squiggle underline, here we have the Tana Didon, and several lines up from the bottom, you'll notice where the Gemara text juts out, the second of those widest lines, Rav Yossi Aglili is also squiggle underlined. The Gemara will be turning to each one of these Tanaic sources and asking, what does he do with the other one's pasuk? So here we turn to our Tana, which cited Petach Hamor twice, and ask, Hi Bechor Bechor, the my Ovid Leh, what does he do with the Pasuk that Rabbi Yosef Aglili cited? Answer, Meboy Aleich, Rabbi Yosef Rechanina. Our Tana needs the Bechor Pasuk, Ach Bechor Shor, etc., for Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina's teaching. The Omer Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina. Lomo nemru emurim bevechor shor. This is a reference to the pasuk that we saw above, namely Bamidbar Perek Yudches Pasuk Yudzayin. Rabbi Yosef Hanina uses that pasuk to explain the following. First, he raises a question: why does the Torah specify the need to offer the innards of a Bechor Shor? That's Emurim, or the innards of a Bechor Shor. Emurim b'Bechor Kesef, Emurim b'Bechor Eiz. Why does the Torah have to trouble itself to mention the in a separate form that the firstborn cow, firstborn sheep, firstborn goat, each one of them, when they are brought as sacrifices, they're slaughtered, their blood is sprinkled on the Mizbech, and their innards are offered on the altar. Of course, the meat of these animals goes to the Kohanim. So why is there a need to specify the need of offering the innards of each one of these animals? Rashi, by the way, cites the entire pasuk in the Dibur Masul Lomo Nemru Emurim, and he says, "B'hai kro ach b'chor shor b'chor kesef b'chor eiz lo sifte kodeshem v'ez domam tizrok ala mizbeach v'ez chelbom taktir." So in that pasuk, the es chelbom taktir is a reference to the offering of the innards. The Gemara answers, in other words, Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina raised this issue, now answers, Tzricha, I need a separate enumeration of each one of these animals regarding their innards, and I would not have known one from the other. D'i, Kosef Rachmona b'Bechor Shor, had the Torah taught only B'chor Shor and expect me to learn the need of offering the innards of the other ones, the sheep and goat, B'chor, I wouldn't have come to such a conclusion. I would have known it only by the Bechor Shor. Shekenis Rabba bin Esochim. When it comes to the accompanying offerings of different korbanos, when an animal is, when a sacrifice is brought from a shor, so the amount of Nesachim is larger. It's a larger quantity of Nesachim. Nesachim involves the wine and meal offering that comes along with the animal offering. So that's the Nesachim. The shor has a larger quantity of Nesachim. Therefore, I would have said, well, an animal like a shor that has a large quantity of Nesachim that accompanies it, its innards need to be offered on the Mizbeach. I wouldn't know that when it comes to the other animals that have a lesser quantity of Nesachim. Kesev, if the Torah had written just Kesev, the need to offer its innards, Shekinis Rabba Ba'alya, well, that's because the sheep, when brought as a sacrifice, its tail, which is sometimes called the fat tail, or Alya, is offered. This is not the case. Other animals don't have that. Be'ez, likewise, had the Torah mentioned only by A's the Emurim offering, Shekain Nisrabetz of Yitzchachovim B'yochid. When it comes to a person who violates idolatry, an individual who violates idolatry, the only kind of korban he is able to bring is a goat offering. So a goat has this special feature, is that it is the designated sacrifice when idolatry is violated. So I wouldn't know the need to offer the Emurim by Kesef or Shor had the Torah taught me just about A's. Chado mechado lo asyo. So the Gemara says, granted, by stating one, I wouldn't be able to figure out any one other. However, tesi chado mitarti, why not have the Torah write the need of offering the innards by two of these animals, and let me derive the third one from having stating just two, instead of what the Torah actually does, it states all three. As we know, the Torah strives for brevity. So here the suggestion is, instead of stating all three animals, state two, and let me figure out the third. The Gemara will now demonstrate how we could not have done that. Behein lo lichtov. So, which are you suggesting should not have been written? Lo lichtov rachmono b'shor. Let the Torah have left out the reference to innards of shor. V'teisei mehanoch. And let me derive it from stating sheep and goat. No, I wouldn't have been able to do that. Malahanoch. If the Torah just stated sheep and goat, I would have said only sheep and goat have an innards requirement. Shekeinis rabu eitzel psochim. They have a special feature that you do not find by the shore, by the ox or cow, in that sheep and goat are the only animals that would be acceptable as a Pesach, Korban Pesach offering. So, based on that, I would have said, since they have this special feature in that they are the only ones acceptable as a Korban Pesach, it might be that they are the only ones that have a murim that need to be offered in the case of the Bechor, and not in the case of a firstborn cow. Loi lichtoiv bekesef. So we try again and say, well, let the Torah have left out the kesef emurim reference, the teisei mehanoch, and derive it from the cow and goat. This too would not have been successful. Ma lahanoch, the case of cow and goat, shekein nisraba eitzel v'iskohovim betzibor. If there is a public violation of idolatry, there is a cow offering brought as an ola, and a soyer, a goat offering brought as a sin, as a chatos, sin offering. So that you see that cow and goat have significance that you don't find by sheep. Well, lo lichtoiv rachmona be'ez. Let the Torah not have written innards by the firstborn goat, v'teisei mehanoch, and let me derive it from having stated cow and sheep. Once again, ma lahanoch, I would not have been able to derive goat from them. Shekein yesh bohen tzad riboy eitzel mizbeach. They have a feature of something extra with regard to their being offered. What we mean by that is, a shor has a riboy, has an increase in terms of nesachim, the accompanying offerings, the wine meal offering, and the sheep has a feature that is a riboy eitzel mizbeach, in that in addition to the innards being offered, there's also the fat tail that's offered, which you don't find by the goat. So, hilkoch tzrichi, therefore, it would not have been sufficient for the Torah to state innards by cow and sheep, and leave me to figure out goat on my own. Therefore, as we just saw, the Gemara went through all the different combinations. By stating two, I will not have been able to figure out the third one. Therefore, tzrichi means it's necessary to state innards by each one. And that's what Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina learns from the Pasuk, and that's exactly what our Tana uses the Pasuk Rabbi Yossi Glili cited before. Now, Rabbi Yossi Glili, what's his response? After all, wouldn't he need the Pasuk for what we just said? And yet he uses this Pasuk for the issue of offspring similarity to parent in order for there to be a din of Bechora. So Rabbi Yossi Glili says, in Cain, if the Pasuk was only for the issue of the need to offer the offerings, the innards, lichtov kro ach bechor shor kesef v'eiz. It could have stated in a more abbreviated fashion. However, bechor lamali. Why does the Torah repeat the word bechor with each animal, not just the shor? But it says, in addition to bechor shor, it says bechor kesef, bechor eiz. Elolav shma mino. Rather, we are to derive from this, ad shehu shor uvechoro shor, that there won't be a mitzvah of bechor until the offspring resembles the parent. For Rabbi Yossi Aglili, hi petachamor, my ovid lei. What does Rabbi Yossi Aglili do with the double expression of petachamor, the double citation of petachamor, firstborn donkey? Liboy alei lichavitanya. Rabbi Yossi Aglili needs it for that which is featured in the following Tanaic source. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, mitoch shenemar, ach pado tifteh es b'chor odom ves b'chor habehemo hatmeo tifteh. The Torah commands the need to redeem firstborn man and firstborn unkosher variety animal. Shomani afilu pitrei susim gemalim. Well, you say unkosher variety animal, that will include firstborn horses and camels as well. Is there a need to redeem them? Talmud lomar petach hamor. The Torah therefore adds petach hamor. Petach Hamor, Amarti, Loch, Velo, Pitre, Susa, Mugbalim. Only firstborn donkeys, not firstborn horses nor camels. Va'adayan animo, but still, I would argue, Pitre Hamor Beseh, Pitre Susum Gemalim Becholdovar. Maybe the Torah makes an allowance for the redemption of a firstborn donkey through a sheep, but firstborn other things, like horses and camels, they can be redeemed with anything, and not specifically a sheep. So according to this suggestion, it might be that firstborn horses and camels do have sanctity to them. Talmud Lomar, therefore the Torah repeats Petach Hamor, Shnei Pomim. It mentions Petach Hamor twice. Pitre Hamor Martiloch, Velo Pitre Susum Gemalim. By the fact that the Torah repeats it, it's trying to make the point that only firstborn donkeys are subject to sanctity when dealing with the realm of unkosher variety animals, and not any other unkosher variety animal. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.